Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sucha He Krishna Kurunda Sindhu Dhinna Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Dhala Kanta Mostute Tapi Kanchana Gaurangi Radhi Vinda Vineshwari Vrishabhana Satyadevi Pranamami Harikare Vanchika Patrukvascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevcha Palitananam Pamevyo Vaishwaya Maham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sthaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauru Vani Vitharane Nidavisesha Sandhavari Pashtatala Sitharane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasari Guru Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 11, Chapter 28, Jnana Yoga, Text Number 15. Shukha Harsha Baya Krodha Lobha Moha Sprihaddaya Ahankarasya drishyante
Ahankarasya drishyante
Janma mrityus janatmana
Janma mrityus janatmana
Shukha harsha bhaya krodha
Shukha harsha bhaya krodha
Lobha moha sprihadaya
Lobha moha sprihadaya
Ahankarasya drishyante
Ahankarasya drishyante
Janma mrityus chanatmana
Janma mrityus chanatmana
Shoka harsha bhaya
krodha Shoka harsha bhaya krodha
Lobha moha sprihaddaya
Lobha moha sprihaddaya
Ahankarasya drishyante
Ahankarasya drishyante
Janma mrityus chanatmana
Janma mrityus chanatmana
Shoka.
Shoka.
Lamentation.
Lamentation.
Harsha.
Harsha.
Elation.
Elation.
Baya.
Baya.
Fear.
Fear.
Krodha.
Krodha.
Anger.
Anger.
Lobha.
Lobha.
Greed.
Greed.
Moha.
Moha.
Confusion.
Confusion.
Spriha.
Spriha.
Hankering.
Adaya,
Adaya, and so on.
Ahankarasya,
of false ego.
Drishyante,
they appear. Janma,
Janma,
birth.
Mrityu,
death.
Cha,
and. Na, not. Atmana,
Atmana
of the soul.
Of the soul.
Translation. Lamentation, elation, fear, anger, greed, confusion, and hankering, as well as birth and death, are experiences of the false ego and not of the pure soul. Purport. False ego is the pure soul's illusory identification with the subtle material mind and gross material body. As a result of this illusory identification, the conditioned soul feels lamentation for things lost, jubilation over things gained, fear of things inauspicious, anger at the frustration of his desires, and greed for sense gratification, and so on. And so, bewildered by such false attractions and aversions, the conditioned soul must accept further material bodies, which means he must undergo repeated births and deaths. One who is self-realized knows that all such mundane emotions have nothing to do with the pure soul, whose natural propensity is to engage in the loving service of the Lord. So, I'll read the translation again. Shokkaha sabaya krodha loga moha svihadaya ahankarasa drishyante janma mrityus chanatmanaha. Lamentation, elation, fear, anger, greed, confusion and hankering, as well as birth and death, are experiences of the false ego and not of the pure soul. So here in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna is distinguishing the nature of the soul from the material body. An intelligent person, or one who is trained in knowledge, should be able to do that, should be able to see what is the material body, and they should be able to distinguish that material body, both the subtle and gross material body, from the spirit soul. So that is knowledge, that is necessary. And by understanding that one is different from the material body, then of course one will search out what are the needs of the spirit soul. And searching out the needs of the spirit soul, ultimately one will come to the platform of bhakti yoga, and that will take one back to the spiritual world. So this understanding of the difference between the material body and the spirit soul is very important. And of course, if that's not there, if one cannot see that beyond the material body, there is the spiritual self, then one has no other recourse but to accept the material body as oneself. Or some may accept the material body as illusion and accept that there is no self, such as the Buddhist. But either one accepts a voidistic philosophy that there is no self and that the material body is illusion, one can never go back to the spiritual world. Or if one accepts that the material body is the self, one cannot go back to the spiritual world. Either way, one has to be able to see that there is a spirit soul who is our actual self, in order to, you know, that is the beginning platform of treading the path back to the spiritual world. So it's very important to be able to make that distinction. So here Lord Krishna is giving an example to Uddhava that the example of a dream. So he's giving this example to show that the material body is different. You can accept an illusory body that's different from yourself. That's what happens in a dream. So he's giving that example, starting from text 12, that when we go to sleep, we may dream that we are, you know, in a different body. Accepting that particular dream body as the actual self, whatever happens in that dream, you know, within that illusory situation, we become affected by it. So if we're being chased by a tiger in our dream, we start running like that. We don't think, a tiger is coming to chase me, but I'm just lying in bed dreaming, so I'll not run. Although it is possible that those, you know, on those who practice astral travel and yogis have this ability to some degree, that it is possible to be conscious that you are sleeping and dreaming even while you're sleeping and dreaming. It is possible to actually be laying there dreaming and thinking, oh, this is, you know, I'm just sleeping and dreaming. So that is possible, but generally we don't. Generally we don't. If there's a tiger chasing us in our dream, we, you know, run for our lives, and we become terrified. So much so that if we suddenly woke up, we may find that we're actually sweating, you know, profusely, physically. So, you know, it's a very, very real fear like that. We may, you know, suddenly wake up screaming. You know, people have nightmares. Sometimes you have to go to little children in the night. You hear them screaming at, you know, the end of the house. You have to run up there because the dream is so real that you know, they're terrified. You know, even adults. You know, my father is 73. He has nightmares regularly. You know, terrifying. Because of his youth, his upbringing, a lot of violence and what have you. So he doesn't sleep with my mother because he will quite often wake up throwing punches, you know, because in the dream someone is attacking him. So, you know, they can't sleep together. He'll wake up, you know, thinking, trying to bash him. So, you know, these are nightmares or dreams. One will accept a body and fully identify with that body, even though, you know, it's an illusory body, it's a dream body, nothing's actually happening. You know, the fact is that the person is laying in the bed, asleep, and there's no tiger, there's no one trying to, you know, attack them. You know, none of these things are happening. So it's just, but one is identifying fully with that body. So Krishna is giving that example to show that it is possible, and the spirit soul actually does the same thing with the material body. The material body that we have, we fully identify with it, even though it is different from our actual self. So Krishna is giving this example to show how it is possible. And what happens, of course, is that in the very same way, although whatever is happening to us in the material world is not actually happening to the spirit soul, but the illusory body that we accept, we fully identify that these things are happening to us. And therefore we experience things such as lamentation, elation, fear, anger, greed, confusion, hankering, as well as birth and death. So Sahidananda Goswami Maharaj gives examples, you know, the essence that, for instance, when the illusory identification is there, the conditioned soul feels lamentation for lost things. So, you know, if we lose something, you know, we leave our wallet on the bus, or, you know, we lose something valuable, you know, we actually feel that we've lost something. But actually the spirit soul hasn't lost anything. Actually the actual person hasn't lost anything, the spirit soul. Similarly, we become jubilant when things are gained. So one may, get more money. One may get a new job, and more money is coming in. So one may feel that, yes, now I'm gaining so much, and celebrate at this. Or, traditionally, of course, we see, so many causes of jubilation. What are some of the things that we have great jubilation for in this world? What's one of the biggest things that happens? Marriage. wedding celebration. Someone, we feel, yes, they've gained, a husband, wife. So, big celebration, many days. Actually, the spiritual soul has gained nothing. Nothing has, for the spiritual soul, actually, nothing has changed. This is all going on in the, the illusory state. But actually, for the spiritual soul, none of these things are happening. This is all happening for the material body, which is not the self. Fear of things inauspicious. Fear of things inauspicious. Something is inauspicious, of course, if it is going to cause us some difficulty, if it could cause us death, loss, separation from those that we care for, so many different things. These are, so we become fearful. Something may cause us illness or, some tragedy, some difficulty. But again, for the spirit soul, these inauspicious things, what is inauspicious for the soul? The soul cannot become ill. We see in the Bhagavad Gita, the spirit soul cannot be cut, cannot be burned, cannot be dried, cannot be withered by, the wind, cannot be moistened. None of these things can affect the spirit soul. How can there be something inauspicious? And the spirit soul is eternal and blissful, like this. So, inauspiciousness relates to the material body, but actually for the self, there is nothing to be fearful of. And we see also anger at the frustration of his desires. So, again, on the platform of the material body, one may have many desires for happiness, to enjoy in a particular way, the material senses, the material sense objects. But again, when something is frustrated, it does not actually frustrate the soul. It does not actually affect the soul. The soul is not obstructed in any way. One cannot obstruct the soul. So here also we see that, and there is greed for sense gratification. So, when one becomes has strong desires for sense gratification, that can increase and increase and increase, and as the mode of ignorance, couples with the mode of passion, then that lust can transform into a very strong greed. So in this way, there are so many different. They call it here experiences, and those experiences are experiences of the false ego and not of the pure soul. so this is a very therefore Krishna, in pointing this out, is helping us to understand that the example of the dream, that we have accepted the material body as the self, but our self is different, the spirit soul. So he's showing, with the example of the dream, how this is possible, and in the same way that many things happen to us, many experiences happen to us in a dream situation, in the same way when the soul, through false ego, accepts the material body as the self, and so many inauspicious things experiences appear to be happening, although then they're happening in relationship to the body, beginning, you know, due to the false ego, but they're not actually happening to the soul. In the same way that the experiences of a dream are not actually happening to the person who's laying in bed, you know, identifying with the dream body. So that is the point of this. At the same time, these different things need to be taken in a proper perspective, because the material world, this is an analogy, but we shouldn't therefore say in one sense, although the material world is like a dream, that it doesn't exist. It's an illusion. There are some philosophers who will take, you know, these verses, or not these verses, but the, you know, the philosophy that the world is something like a dream, to the wrong degree, that therefore you know, material existence is altogether an illusion, just like as Ramai Swami was saying the other day, that, you know, a dream actually exists. So those things are happening, but it's a temporary state, and one is actually lying comfortably, so it's not happening to oneself. The dream itself is existing. More so, you know, although our life during daytime is like a dream, it's actually happening. The material energy is there, and we are in a material body in the material world. We cannot say that no, that is, you know, that is completely illusion. In other words, if we say this material world is an illusion, therefore, you know, I will not have any fear. So therefore, even though I'm crossing the road, the lights are red, but it's all illusion, I will not have any fear. But if you walk in front of a bus, you're going to get splattered. Yeah. So, you know, the material energy, you know, is existing. It is one of the energies of the Lord. It's the shadow energy of the spiritual energy, but it is actually existing. So therefore, one may question that, you know, we may say fearfulness is a symptom of the pure spirits, is a symptom of the false ego. Therefore, one should not be fearful under any circumstances, because all of material existence is totally illusory. So that's not quite correct. one should, in fact, understand that the illusion that we shouldn't accept is that, okay, I am not the material body. So that is the illusion. So one should be, you know, alert to that illusion, and therefore understand that I shouldn't be so fearful what happens to the body is happening to me, because I'm an eternal soul. At the same time, there is a fear that I need this material body, because this material body is like a boat, very rare. It's out of all the different 8 million forms of life, 8,400,000, the human form of life is the one opportunity to actually become God conscious, Krishna conscious, self realized, God realized. With this body, we can actually read these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam and understand them. So, we actually need this body, and we need to take care of it in order to perfect our Krishna consciousness and go back to the spiritual world. So, Srila Prabhupada used to say, you make the best use of a bad bargain. So, therefore, although we shouldn't be unnecessarily fearful thinking that we are the material body, but there's a certain element where that fear can be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, that we need to protect the material body in order to perfect that Krishna consciousness and go back to the spiritual world. And we see that in the life of all the acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, that they did this. They never acted neglectfully with regards, artificially showing a fearlessness, but they never acted artificially or showing neglect or disregard for the body which they're using in Krishna service, which they consider actually the property of the Lord, nor for the body of other devotees who they also try to protect. So to give you an example, just so that we can reflect a little on this, one time, because Srila Prabhupada, when he was a child, he was telling his disciples that they were building one building and in India, and he climbed way up, you know, several stories in this big building, was sort of walking on the scaffolding and what have you. And his disciples said to him, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you know, you must have been very brave when you were a child." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, and I'm still brave. Otherwise, you know, how could I come to the Western world and preach?" And that's what he said. So, you know, going to the Western world to preach was actually, you know, a very fearful situation, you know, for so much so that you know, even you know, many or most disciples of even great preaching acharyas were fearful to go to the West, and some that went back in fear, you know, and disappointment. The Western world, very, you know, not just the Western world, but the material world, very, very difficult. Especially, Srila Prabhupada was sent by his spiritual master to preach in the West. And when Srila Prabhupada went to America in 1965, late 1965, by about April, you know, he still really hadn't established himself at all. And at that stage, he was living in the Bowery. The Bowery, I don't know. I know when I was a child, I used to watch, there was a show about the Bowery Boys. I don't know if anyone. They were sort of down and out, derelicts. It's an area in New York, I think it was. And there was something like 7,000 or 8,000 people out of work, unemployed, many of them turning to intoxication, and then plus you mix in a few of the, you know, early hippies on LSD and what have you. You know, it was a very dangerous place. You know, the only way you could survive there was by basically being, you know, a thief, you know, a crook, you know, violent like that. So it was huge, you know, compared to the statistics to the rest of the United States. It just soared with violence and crime and what have you. Very, very, very dangerous place. So Srila Prabhupada, previous to that, he was staying in a room 307 somewhere there in New York. But what happened was someone broke into his room and stole his tape recorder and his tape recorder and what was it? Typing machine, his typewriter and his tape recorder. And yeah, the Bhagavad Gita manuscript, that was that then as well, or was that previous? Bhagavad Gita manuscript. So these things were stolen. So then the janitor was describing to Prabhupada how they must have got in, and Prabhupada sort of sussed out that it was probably you that did it. You know, he understood from the conversation with the janitor. So he knew that basically because the janitor was breaking into his room, that he could never be safe there, so he had to sort of immediately leave. And so someone offered him a place on the Bowery. That was, of course, his only option. You know, he didn't have a whole lot of options. He had this one option, and a couple of people said to Srila Prabhupada that, you shouldn't go there. Because it's it is not a place for a gentleman like yourself. It's a very dangerous place. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada didn't have the option. There was a big loft available, about 4 flights of stairs up. But he had to share the room with another tenant, David Allen, I think his name was, who, you know, was somewhat trying to, you know, take advantage of Srila Prabhupada's kindness, you know, in a nice way, trying to learn from Srila Prabhupada and trying to, and Srila Prabhupada was trying to help him, even though he was, you know, occasionally taking, you know, LSD or regularly taking LSD and what have you. Srila Prabhupada was even going to take him to India when he returned. You know, at one stage, David, you know, he started pacing up and down the room, and then he started moaning, and then he started howling. You know, when people start howling, you know you're in trouble, and they're in trouble. That's it. People don't usually howl. He was howling. It's a very, very scary thing. If you've been with people who start howling, very, very scary. They're likely to do anything. And you know, Srila Prabhupada asked, you know, so what is wrong? You know, what's the matter, Alan? And this, and Alan just, you know, just looked at him, eyes open wide, you know, and this. So Srila Prabhupada knew, you know, and he just, you know, Prabhupada was what, about 70 something years old. What's that? 71. So, you know, he just flew down 4 flights of stairs like this. And then out into the streets. So at this stage, of course, Srila Prabhupada's got nowhere to stay, left all his belongings, everything. So quick, you know, left everything, every single thing, just straight down those stairs, as he knew. So, you know, you see that, you know, Srila Prabhupada took, you know, immediate steps to protect the body that he was using in the service of Krishna. It's not that one should artificially think that, you know, I am a great devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions this, there's some statements in the Bhagavad Gita like this, that one should not be artificial in this regard. You know, he didn't think that, you know, I'm not this body. Nothing can happen to the spirit soul. I'll just sit here and do nothing. Krishna arranges these situations with his devotees because they're setting the example so that we act properly. And, you know, he took all, you know, immediately just left to protect. You know, he had a mission. You know, Prabhupada had a mission. He had a service to do. His spiritual master had asked him, you go to the West and you preach Krishna consciousness. He'd just arrived. You know, he had a service to do. He can't just allow that, you know, if there is any fear, of course. The fear is, I cannot allow my service to, I cannot fail the service my spiritual master has given. That is where the fear propensity, you know, is then dovetailed in the service of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, one should not be artificially, you know, situated that, yes, I'm a devotee of the Lord, I'm not this body, therefore I'm supposed to be fearless and act in a negligent way with a material body, which is very valuable for taking one back to the spiritual world, and nor should one be negligent with regard to anything which is the paraphernalia or the property of the Lord. And one should also be very, very careful to, you know, try to help to protect other devotees of the Lord as well. And that is the proper mood. Therefore, you know, even in the Krishna conscious temple, sometimes when I'm seeing different people, families come to the temple for the ceremonies, they always just leave their bags of cameras and money. They just put them on the seat, and they think, we've come to the Hare Krishna temple, you know, and, you know, we've got to wander off somewhere to do a hair cutting. They just leave everything there. And I say, no, no, you can't do that. You have to take all your things and you have to bring them with you. Or I can lock them in this room. Because you can, you know, guarantee that someone will take them. But that, you know, they're thinking, oh, this is a Hare Krishna temple, this is a place of God, and then, you know, therefore you should not be fearful or this, that or the other. But we have to understand the same way that Srila Prabhupada is living in the Bowery for that time. You know, we're living just up the road from St. Kilda. Prabhupada actually said, you know, when his things were taken from the room in 307, he said that, he said, he wrote in his diary, I notice that in America, they're all well paid, you know, basically, most of them, you know. And, you know, as I said, the janitor already had a job. And they have most things that they need, but still they do things like, you know, thieving, because they just have bad character, such as the society, you know. So that's the nature of, the, you know, the day and age that we live in. Of course, we're just up the road from St. Kilda. So, you know, you do get different druggies, derelicts, all sorts of people. We'll just wander through sometimes. Sometimes I'll just come here just to take something. Yeah. Or to take as much as they can. So, you know, in this way, devotees should have a, you know, not an artificial sense of fearlessness. Fearless in the sense that we're not this material body. But not artificial, that we're not looking after the body which we're using to perfect to go back to the spiritual world, and nor the paraphernalia of the Lord which we're caring for on behalf of the Lord and using in the Lord's service in this way. So there are and there are many emotions actually that we see in the lives of the devotees, such as lamentation. We see that Arjuna lamented. So one, you know, one of the points, of course, is that we should be careful that sometimes people may see some of these qualities in a devotee, and without proper knowledge, think, well, this devotee is fearful, this devotee is lamenting, this devotee is like this, therefore this devotee is in Maya. But actually, if you can take any one of these qualities, and you will see them present in the acharyas in their pure form. Such as lamentation. Who is famous for lamenting? Who do we know? Who is famous for lamenting? Although he's a great Vaishnava. Arjuna. Krishna had to chastise him. He's lamenting. So much so. So much, not just a little sigh. You know, he dropped his bow. He couldn't fight. He couldn't perform. He was lamenting, you know, as strongly as a person could lament, to, you know, to its furthest degree. And of course, he was lamenting that he had to perform a duty where he was very sad that he would have to kill so many personalities, many of whom he loved as, you know, friends, relatives and gurus, like this. So Krishna, of course, chastised him that we shouldn't lament on the material platform. So that is correct. That is correct. So Arjuna, you know, the same as what this verse is saying, that we should not lament for the on a material platform. We should always try to see things that living entities of the spirit soul. We are a spirit soul, so we should try and see in that way. But at the same time, Prabhupada glorifies Arjuna's lamentation that it was natural. Now, one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture and someone criticized, you know, what is the use of this Bhagavad Gita and, you know, this teaching of Krishna to Arjuna? We see that Arjuna, you know, lamented like an ordinary person. You know, why should we glorify Krishna's teaching and Arjuna? Arjuna was lamenting. His friend is supposed to be the personality of Godhead, and we see that he's lamenting. You know, even though his best friend is supposed to be the Supreme Person of Godhead, we see him lamenting. So what is this nonsense? So, you know, Prabhupada glorified Arjuna. You know, this is natural. This is, you know, his compassion, natural emotions. You know, no one wants to cause harm to any living entity on any platform, material, you know, what have you. So, but Prabhupada pointed out that the difference with the devotee is that they do take instruction from Krishna, and if there is some, you know, lamentation or, you know, some disturbance, they quickly, you know, take the instructions of Krishna and perform their duty. So in the ultimate result was, although Arjuna lamented, which is natural, he still performed his duty. Right? So sometimes we see that, you know, in great, you know, difficult circumstances, even stalwart devotees will, you know, show some of these different qualities. But because they're great devotees, they're very quickly put in their situation where they, you know, perform their duty. So that is on the material platform, we, in one sense, lamenting for the material body. But we also see that, you know, one may lament, one should learn to lament or dovetail one's lamentation in Krishna consciousness. So therefore we see that Narottam Das Thakur, you know, he lamented that I have this human form of body and I've knowingly, you know, drunken the poison of, you know, trying to enjoy material sense gratification so many different ways, and I have not served Radha Krishna. I have this wonderful opportunity and I've completely wasted it. It's like drinking poison like this. One may also lament that one has not done one's service as well as one, you know, would like to please Krishna. It's like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was initiating one sannyasi, and you know, when he was at the very initiation, you know, his partner, wife, came in and dragged that man away like that. Because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, he shed tears, and they asked him why he was so, you know, lamenting like that. He said, because I could not save him. I could not save that spirit soul. He was lamenting. We see also on a very elevated, another very elevated spiritual platform, that Madhavendra Puri, at the moment of his death, just before he was passing away, he was reciting a verse by Srimati Radharani, you know, lamenting in separation from Krishna. Very, very elevated spiritual emotions. And his disciple Ramchandra Puri, he came to him and he said, you know, chastise his spiritual master, you know, why are you all lamenting? You know, have you not read Bhagavad Gita and, you know, the Vedas? You are supposed to be, you know, on the platform of a Brahman, understanding you're a spirit soul. You have nothing to lament for. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? You're on the platform of Brahman, there's no hankering or lamenting. And Madhavendra Puri chastised him. Get away from here. I don't ever want to see your face again. Like this. Such you offender. Like this, you know, sent him away, drove him with anger. We see the lamentation and anger. Like this. But all on the transcendental platform. Like this. So, you know, these verses are intended to help us to understand that we are a spirit soul and not the material body, and that the on the platform of the identifying with the material body, we experience so many material forms of fear, lamentation, greed, lust, and what have you. But on this, but this verse is not going past that, and we should not, therefore, we should be a little careful that if we see these experiences dovetailed in Krishna consciousness or even on a very elevated transcendental platform, we should not equate them as being the exact same at that. and not in that way misrepresent our philosophy. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Oh, yeah. Just to add a comment, even Hanuman also used anger in the service of Ramachandra.
That's right, yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Hanuman is famous, and Arjun for using the anger in the service of the Lord. In fact, you know, at certain stages, because Arjun was not angry enough, Krishna had to incite his anger in different ways. You know, you're not angry enough. How are you going to perform this duty properly? You know, you need more anger. Like that. So, any proposal?
Just trying to bring something up in my mind. I was talking about the Lord protecting the lady. In some pastime, where one of the ladies is in danger from some animal, some wild animal, that's a nigger. And it's chastised because the Lord is actually protecting the lady. They're being neglectful.
Right. No, I can't. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was Raghunath Das Goswami. That Raghunath Das Goswami used to sit and chant Hare Krishna, and he would become so absorbed in his meditation that he, you know, just did not do anything at all to maintain the material body. And one time they saw him, Sanatan and Rupa, they were watching, and Raghunath Das Goswami was there chanting, and a tiger actually came. And Krishna sort of appeared there. What's that? No, it's Krishna, to make sure that that tiger didn't harm his devotee. So what happened was that later Sanatan and Rupa chastised Raghunath Das Goswami that, you know, you made Krishna come to protect you. You know, that you know, you should construct a little bhajan kutir, something like this. You know, Raghunath Das Goswami didn't take up that instruction, you know. And again, another time, they saw him chanting. The sun, very, very intense heat, so much so that, you know, they thought that Raghunath Das Goswami would, you know, leave his body, his transcendental body. And as they were watching, Srimati Radharani came and she held her sari over his head to protect him from the heat. Like this. So then later again, you know, they chastise him. Now you've made Radharani come to, you know, to serve you. See? So this is what, you know, if a devotee is not looking after their material body, you know, and they shouldn't expect, oh, Krishna will come and do me service. You know, we're supposed to be serving Krishna. So Raghunath and Sanatan were, you know, like that. You must, you know, build a little bhajan kutir. So that was actually the beginning of the bhajan kutir system, where they build a little hut. Those instances, now you see the different Babajis and what have you in Vrindavan have their bhajan hut as a result of that, you know, incident. So the idea is that yes, Krishna is protecting his devotees. Devotees always feel protected, but they shouldn't have a mood that Krishna is my servant and I'll just do anything I please and be negligent and Krishna can just sweep up after me. But that one should perform one's duty as far as looking after the body, looking after the you know, welfare of other devotees, and looking after the property of the Lord to the best of one's ability as a servant of Krishna, like that. That's the point there. Yeah, it's a nice example. Mm. And, yep. Mm. That's right, yeah. One time Prabhupada was giving a class. One time Prabhupada was giving class, he just began giving class, and one devotee sort of sneezed, you know, like sort of a cold type thing. Another devotee had a little cough. Should have probably said, "What, you know, what is this? Sneezing?" And I noticed someone else is, you know, why didn't you put a jumper on? You know, you should look after your material body. And he spoke exactly the same. You know, you're using this body in Krishna. And although he was going to give a class, he spent nearly 20 minutes addressing the situation. The devotees weren't properly dressed. How can you do your service to Krishna if you're sick? You haven't even got to put a jumper on. Look after the body like this. You know, you should be using that fear propensity in Krishna's service, that yes, I could get sick and not do my service properly. And that is, the devotee should have that mentality. Therefore, Prabhupada chastised them. You know. Not that, you know, I'll just walk around with flimsy clothing, I'll get sick, and I'll just hope that Krishna somehow or another protects me. You know, like this. Anyway, to get the intelligence to serve Krishna nicely, one should chant Hare Krishna. And of course, to be protected from all the dangers of the material world, one should chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada said that the safest place to be in the material world is in Harinam Kirtan. So I'll leave you with that thought. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.